7 years ago, Nina McLaughlin had a revelation.
Sitting in front of her computer at the now defunct Boston Phoenix, she was editing the list of the world's 100 unsexiest men, which in 2008 included Osama bin Laden, Gary Busey, and Kevin Federline.
And then this troubling thought crept in. You will die, and this is an empty way to spend the days.
6 months later, without any alternative plan, Nina McLaughlin quit what she once considered the perfect job.
And almost on a whim, she applied to an ad she found on Craigslist. It was an ad to become a carpenter's apprentice. The thing is, Nina at that time didn't even know how to hammer a nail. Well, Nina McLaughlin writes about her journey in her new book, Hammerhead, The Making of a Carpenter, and she joins us now in the studio to talk about it. Welcome to Radio Boston, Nina.
It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. Listeners, we're going to hear Nina's story in just a minute, but there are parts of it which may already ring familiar to you, and that is, have you ever had the urge or the desire to make a dramatic change in your life, but you feel or felt something holding you back? Have you had the urge to throw away an office job, say, and really work with your hands, to make a living with your hands? Or do you have a question in general about what it takes to make it as a modern-day carpenter and contractor? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet or talk to us on Facebook. We're at Radio Boston. All right, Nina. So let's just go back to the beginning.
Sure.
First of all, 2008, you were working at the Phoenix. Rest in peace.
Rest in peace.
The good Boston Phoenix. What was it really about that moment and what you were doing that just called out for change?
You know, I had been there for a while, and like you said, it was an amazing place to work and an amazing place to spend my 20s, and I loved going to work every day. My job evolved over time, and sort of I was in a position where I was doing a lot of sort of clicking and sitting in front of a computer screen, and just didn't feel the pleasure anymore. Was just sort of felt myself kind of dull-eyed and getting bored and boreder. And it took a long time to sort of summon the courage, but finally sort of reached a point where I said, like I read in the book, you know, this sort of can't go on anymore.
Right.
This is not how I want to spend my days.
But this isn't a story where you thought to yourself, oh, I've always had this hobby of, you know, building things and making things, and maybe I want to turn that hobby into a career. It was nothing like that whatsoever.
Right. So it was sort of this vague crave of, I want to do something that has to do a little bit more with reality, something a little bit more tangible, not kind of sitting behind a desk, you know, scrolling through the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very loose craving.
Okay.
For sure.
And so you left your job,
mm-hmm.
2008, not maybe the best time in the
not
world.
Not the best time at all.
To want to make a huge change, given the fact that the nation and the world were gripped in the Great Recession. But you found an ad on Craigslist. Mm. Now, what did the ad say specifically that caught your eye?
Yeah, so it was really basic. Carpenter's assistant sought women strongly encouraged to apply.
Women strongly encouraged
mm-hmm.
to apply,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
And so, like, it was as though it was sort of blinking and bells were going off, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is it. This is it.
Why, though? Why carpentry?
You know, I think that was sort of, to me, in my imagination of what it would be, like, this was a sort of tangible reality that I was craving. You know, this would be learning something that I had absolutely no experience doing, it sort of was fulfilling the idea of what I sort of wanted to do when I was sitting at my desk feeling like my soul was, you know, dying every day.
It seems rather serendipitous to me, right?
Mm.
Because there are a lot of ways to express creativity or tangible creativity. But here you got this ad of online on Craigslist things for a carpenter's assistant and women strongly encouraged to apply. So you wrote.
I wrote a ridiculous email about how I had no experience, that I, you know, I could put together sentences, didn't know how to, you know, do anything having to do with carpentry, but that I was very curious.
You're
and
curious
eager.
And you could write.
Yeah,
and you're
yeah.
eager, but, you know, could you measure 3/16?
Nope, couldn't do that at all. Couldn't do it.
And yet a woman named Mary wrote back.
Mm-hmm. It was a sort of a two-step process. She wrote back initially to 40 people saying that she had gotten over 300 responses in the span of about 18 hours. And I think you spoke 2008, everyone was looking for jobs. And then invited, you know, sort of said, like, what, you know, tell me a little bit more. Why do you want this job? So I told her a little bit more about it. Then she had about six of us, I think, come in and spend one at a time, half a day of work with her. And so I spent half a day tiling with her in a bathroom in this beautiful house in Cambridge. I ended up getting the job.
See, so it speaks to me so much about Mary herself. And I want to ask you a little bit more about her. That from that initial email that you wrote responding to a Craigslist ad when you said, you know, I can put together sentences, but I may not be able to, you know, frame a wall just yet. Mm-hmm. That she saw something in you that was worth sort of giving a chance. Did you ever ask her later on after you got the job of being her assistant, what was it?
You know, I think part of it was compared to the other people that she, the other applicants that she sort of interviewed, I think one was texting all day. One could, you know, barely lift 15 pounds. And I think, you know, she said, you seem like you had a sensible head on your shoulders. I think for me, it was, she's the type of person that I felt an immediate comfort with. You know, it felt like, this is someone who I can get along with from really moment one. Mm-hmm. So I think that had to do with it too, maybe, because it's obvious, you know, you spend a lot of time together. And so that kind of connection was important too.
So on your tryout day with Mary, you go to a big house in Cambridge, not far from Harvard Square. And there you're doing a tiling job with Mary. That's, so it's basically the first sort of hands-on physical thing that you're doing as a carpenter's assistant. You're still trying out with her. And you write about it really beautifully in the book. Do you want to just read us that part?
Sure. The saw roared, but I didn't notice the noise. I didn't notice the spray or the dust or that the front of my shirt was getting soaked. All I knew was the pencil line and the corners of the tile against my fingertips and keeping that cut on the line. I realized at one point that I'd been neglecting to breathe. I pushed the tile slowly, halfway across. Time dilated. Time lasted miles. The section broke off, dripping wet with a tiny chip on the corner. I turned off the saw and handed the cut tile back to Mary, my hands wet now and cold. I chipped the corner, I said. Doesn't matter, Mary said. It'll get hidden under the baseboard. The relief made me think of doing my first Q&A for the newspaper. My editor told me the questions could go in any order I liked, that the interview didn't have to follow the way I'd asked the questions in the interview itself. How literal-minded we are when new to work. How pleasing to learn that there's slack in the toil, room for error and for play.
That's Nina McLaughlin reading from her new book, Hammerhead, The Making of a Carpenter, reading to us the story of the first time she used a tile saw to tile a bathroom floor. And the reason why I really liked this passage, Nina, is because it gets right to something that is echoed. It's like a rolling echo throughout your book about how very quickly when you began to be a carpenter's assistant, you immediately had a sense as to sort of the meditative aspect, the almost, I mean, other people have written similarly, so I'll say it, the spiritual aspect of just being so focused on one particular physical job.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Most of the time I think of writing and carpentry is very different. They sort of activate different rooms in my brain. But in the finest moments, there is this kind of exiting of yourself and you sort of rise above what you're doing. You sort of lose, I don't know, sort of touch with reality in some ways, go beyond the focus and sort of, I don't know, it is that kind of transcendent sort of moment. Not always with carpentry. A lot of times it's like bang thumbs and splinters and, you know, lugging heavy stuff around. But in those moments, there is something, I mean, it really is profound.
Well, listeners, we're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. If you've felt that same sense of the profound when working with your hands, when it comes to anything such as carpentry, electrical work, you know, anything like that, give us a call, 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Or if you've ever done what Nina McLaughlin did, and that is throw away a typical desk job for an entirely new career, would love to hear from you as well. What do you think it takes to make a new carpenter? Let's turn to Belmont, where Liam is calling. You're on the air, Liam.
Hi.
Hi. Hi, what's going on, Liam?
Oh, not much. I'm driving home from my desk job right now. And, I just love the subject. And, I graduated with a 4-year business degree. And, I've found that right now I have an injured knee and I'm stuck at a desk, and I just wish that I could go back to when I was a commercial carpenter right out of school. And pursuing a couple different things right now. Right now I'm a wind turbine technician. You climb wind turbines and work with your hands all day, but you know, commercial carpentry is absolutely something I would definitely go back to.
Liam, thank you so much for your call, and best of luck to you as you go forward. I mean, Liam reminds me about a certain part of your book, which I also was really touched by, and that, I mean, not only are you learning a new set of skills with your hands, but there's all sorts of like intellectual aspects to what it takes to be a very good carpenter that that you're learning as well from Mary.
Sure. And, you know, I still have a lot to learn from Mary. And I think that's one of the reasons why it remains, I mean, I've been doing it now about 6 years, and it remains still so interesting and compelling, is that there's so much left to learn, and you can get so much better and better and better. I think that's one of the reasons Mary's such a good teacher, is that she also gives the impression that she is continuing to improve as well. Mm. And there is, you know, I mean, there is sort of, there's an intellectual aspect of it, sure, and there's, you know, there's also kind of, there's a lot of joking and a lot of making mistakes and trying to figure out how to get it right.
I love it. It's like how you were saying how you never thought you'd use high school geometry, but
oh
there you
gosh.
Were calculating rises and runs for stairs.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, thinking about it, my sullen, you know, 16-year-old self just hating math and thinking, I will never, never use this.
Well, I have to admit, in full disclosure, you're speaking with a woman who has long owned her own tool belt.
Oh, great.
I love working with my hands and you know, doing sort of disastrous things around my own house. But I also thought throughout the whole book, I mean, Mary is the person who the carpenter who trained you and is continuing to train you. You yourself are a woman. In the early in the book, on that first day, you said that a painter came upstairs and said, you know, it's good to see a woman on the job. But in truth, there aren't that many female contractors out there.
No, there really are not a lot of women. Occasionally, you know, there's a woman electrician around. Occasionally, we'll cross paths. But no, it's us and a lot of big guys in construction boots and
pickup
trucks.
Did you ever feel, I don't know what it's like in the world of contracting. Did you ever feel any sense of discomfort, or did your gender, was it ever an issue?
You know, it's not so much discomfort. I guess, you know, there have been moments, you know, walking around the lumberyard where we get these kind of glances and have seen sort of comments made. I guess I'm sort of sensitive to that stuff. I try to keep my brain on the idea that, you know, these guys aren't used to seeing women on the job. You know, they're not used to seeing two women load up, you know, a deck's worth of Brazilian walnut. And so that, of course, they're going to maybe look twice. And that it's not necessarily like, oh, these women aren't capable, but like, oh, interesting. And that's how I try to see it. There have been a couple times where there have been some condescending remarks.
Well, did learning carpentry, did that actually have any effect on you and your concept of your own femininity?
Sure. You know, it's funny. I was never sort of someone to wear high heels or a lot of makeup to my journalism job. But I was finding when I was getting dressed for the carpentry work in sort of beat up old jeans and, you know, six or seven different shirts when it was cold out, kind of layered and dirty. I did sort of feel a little bit stripped of my femininity. And it was a surprising situation for me. I didn't expect the clothes that I was wearing and the work I was doing to sort of rattle something as fundamental as, you know, my own womanhood. But I did find that was the case.
Yeah. Well, not to change the subject here, but we actually have a lot of people who want to join this conversation because it's really touching a nerve in a good way. Craig is calling from Lexington. Let's go to Craig. You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi. Hey,
Craig.
I own a restoration company here in the local area as well, do a lot of work in the same spot. I just listened to your conversation, and I just wanted to call and compliment you on your poetic words with it. And I think it's one of the few industries where we can take such a, you know, it's instant gratification for what we do, is how I like to explain it, where you can stand back at the end of the day and take a look at what you've created from nothing and take a lot of pride in that. Not a lot of jobs allow that.
Yeah. Craig, thank you so... I'm sorry to interrupt you, Craig, but thank you so much for your call because Nina, you tell a great story in the book about building a wall in a Cambridge coffee shop and how you kept stepping back and saying, we made this, we did this. You were just amazed at the miracle of, as Craig said, building something where there once was nothing.
Absolutely. And that's, I mean, to this day, I don't know what it is about walls for me, but it's an amazingly powerful thing. Like there is a wall now. It's to this day still feel that way.
Howell is calling from Lynn. You're on the air, Howell. Howell, are you with us? All right.
Howell.
Oh, hi, Howell. What's your thought today?
Hi, I worked as a carpenter during the summers between years to when I was in college. And I first started out knowing nothing. And knowing nothing, what they do is they make your job to carry the lumber from the pile to the foundation.
Exactly.
You don't even get to carry a hammer.
Yeah. I did a lot of lugging at first. That's, you know, that was absolutely my first steps in the job as well.
Well, then you build up some muscle, then you can they give you a hammer, and you can pound some nails into some plywood. Then when you get some calluses on your hand, you can pound some nails into some 2x4s. And it was just such an amazing thing to look at where there once was a foundation, now to see that building go up. And to know that you were part of the team, and it was your team, and I had never worked with 50-year-olds before, and here are these wonderful guys, mostly they were guys, they were never women or our teams, but they were wonderful guys, you know, 50 years old and so like that, who were just more than generous.
Hey, Howell, I'm gonna jump in here and grab it back for you. I'm sorry to do that. It's just we have only got a couple minutes left with Nina, and I really appreciate your call. I mean, we can hear in our callers here, Nina, that the sense of how learning a trade and just the experience of learning a trade is so rewarding. But I want to take a step back for a moment because we are living in a time and in a society where just the whole idea of apprenticeships just is not as much part of the culture as it once was. Essentially, what you went through are going through with Mary is an apprenticeship. Mm-hmm. I mean, so what does that mean to you that you've had a chance to experience something that that just isn't as much of an opportunity as it once was?
Sure. I mean, Mary, I feel lucky to have been linked up with her. She's an extraordinary teacher and has been from the start. And you know, there were moments I think at first where I did miss the sort of buzz and hum of the newsroom. But being able to sort of work with this one person day after day, sort of by observation, by doing, by listening to her her lessons and sort of explanations on how to do stuff, you know, slowly but surely learning the tricks, and it's a singular relationship in my life and one I don't think I'll have again, and one that I feel extremely lucky to have had.
Mm. Well, we've got a tweet here from Jam, who says, finally the common working man getting respect for swinging a hammer to feed their families. And you know, that reminded me of a line that you wrote in the book where you're swinging a hammer and you're getting really into the rhythm of it, and you talk about dissolving into the motion. I mean, there's a lot of beauty here to be explored. But Jam's tweet made me think about sort of the reality of being a carpenter, being a contractor. I mean, it's a very cyclical type of work to be in. There's a lot of uncertainty. You're your own boss, which is great, but there's a lot of risk that comes with that. I'm wondering if you ran into folks as you were learning who said, hey, it's great that you're doing this, but I'm not necessarily sure I want my own kids to be in this world because it, you know, can be so uncertain.
You know, not as much as I sort of expected. I think people were, you know, either really, really supportive and you know, sort of surprised and excited about it, or would sort of raise an eyebrow and be a little bit skeptical and sort of say, oh, you know, or think that it was a lark and that I was going to do it for about, you know, 6 months or a year and have that be it. So now, 6 years later, I don't know. I don't know what the definition of a lark is. It doesn't seem like a lark to me. But you know, it is a job that, you know, the winter's work slows way down, and so that's when, you know, I sort of do a little bit more writing, and it does come and go. It's hard on the body. It's tiring. It's physical. I get nervous about the stuff that we breathe in all the time. But you know, again, it's just sort of the sort of satisfaction that these callers are speaking to makes it worth it.
And you feel it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, listeners, we've just scratched the surface of Nina McLaughlin's new book, but if you want to hear more, she's speaking tonight at the Harvard Bookstore at 7 p.m. There's more information about that at our website, Radio Boston. The new, radioboston.org, I should say, the book is Hammerhead, The Making of a Carpenter. Nina McLaughlin, it was such a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much.
It was great to be here.
Well, listeners, stick with us. There's more of the show in just a moment, including the Red Sox trying to bring more young fans back to Fenway. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.